and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today I am joined by a very special guest. This lady is an animal whisperer, ladies and gentlemen. If there's nothing she doesn't know about training your dogs, then it's just not worth knowing. It's Alyssa Morn. How are you doing today, Alyssa?
Good, thanks, Goff. How are you?
Very well indeed. Very well indeed. Now, also for context, like myself, you are legally blind. Just so people get a bit of an idea, what is your level of sight and how did you lose your vision?
I don't have any sight. I have a condition, a rare condition, called septo-optic dysplasia. So it impacts the optic discs and the connection between optic nerve and the brain.
Okay, yes. Well, yeah. So it's a bit more of a brain injury than an eye injury.
Yeah. It's sort of, it's a bit of a complex one because it you know, it works a few different areas like neurological, endocrine, vision. Yeah, there's many facets to it.
Because, yes, mine's a brain injury, and it's often when I was younger, all the doctors would say, his eyes are fine, we don't know what the problem is, and clearly it was a brain injury. But
yep.
So it confused a lot of people because the eyes are perfectly fine, but nothing else works. But So that's me, but we're not here to talk about me, are we, Alyssa? We're here to talk about you. So where did the love of animals come from for you?
So the love of animals came from, I spent my childhood interacting with animals. And in fact, interestingly, as a child, I was actually quite fearful. And it took someone fairly sure of themselves. I had someone in my life that was fairly sure of themselves who helped me work through that. Often at great resistance from myself. But I am forever grateful for that because that has led me down the career path I'm currently travelling down.
Well, that's fantastic. Actually, that was going to be one of my questions as well, actually, because, see, I'm not a huge fan of dogs, mainly because I can't see them coming at me and then they jump on me and I freak out and then they think I'm playing, so they jump even more and I freak out even more and it's just a vicious circle. And I know it's my problem, not the dog's problem. So what would be some key advice that you would give to somebody like myself?
So the key advice that I would give anyone having a dog coming up to them that they're not sure of is try to regulate your breathing. I know that sounds really superficial thing to say. Oh, just breathe. But it's amazing how breath and regulating your heart rate and, you know, trying to center your body can actually explain to the dog that they have nothing to be concerned about. And if they are excited, like a puppy or a dog that hasn't been trained, you acting neutral is going to have them jumping a lot less than you engaging with that.
So the key advice is to calm the farm and just if they, because like I say, well, I can't see them coming at me and they come at me and they jump and I'm, and then it's just like I say, it just spirals down from there.
Yeah,
so
it does. It does.
So I need to settle myself down. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes. Yeah, try and regulate the breathing. And if really unsure, just stand extremely still. If you're certain that dog is too rambunctious for you, just stay as still as you can. Sit down if you can. If you're walking and this is happening, just sit down.
And what does sitting do?
Sitting actually brings down the arousal levels of the dog.
Okay.
Because you're automatically relaxing a little bit as you're sitting your body down. So, yeah, it's very much a case of what can you do to lower the arousal levels of the dog.
Cool. Now, I often think, and I could be wrong, so feel free to correct me, but I often think that dogs mimic their owners. Agree, disagree, discuss.
I wouldn't say they mimic their owners. Sometimes mimicry happens. That is part of social learning. But I'm going to say they do share, I guess they do share the emotions of their family. Some people would go as far as to say they might take on some of their family's emotional baggage. I don't quite subscribe to that. I feel like they do share it, they do respond, and they do respond to the way we're behaving. Mimicry is something that they do as a learning, but they do that as part of their learning. They are social animals, and so they learn the way we work together and live together by seeing.
So are the owners and the humans, are we, obviously we would be the biggest influence on the dog? Would that be a fair statement?
That is a fair statement, yes.
In regards to that then, when you are training the dog, would you say that the humans maybe require even more training than the dog does? Because obviously he's the human, the owner is the biggest influencer, so you need to sort of also train the owner as much as you need to train the dog. Is that fair?
So training the owner or educating the owner is key. Without human education, dogs don't pick up on the skills that they need to get through their life and get through the world.
So the owner can be the biggest hindrance for a dog behaving how you want it to behave. Is that
what? Pretty much. That sums it up nicely.
And they can how are some of the ways that an owner can sort of get in the way of the dog being trained successfully? What are some of the key things that owners do? And you're like, oh, why are you doing that?
So some of the key things that they do is they try to discipline the dog, you know, telling them what they've done wrong, but not actually giving them cues as to what they've done right.
So what about in regards to like rewarding bad behaviour with dogs? You know, is it a lot like parenting a young child perhaps in regards to, you know, you don't reward bad behaviour, so to speak?
It is very much like parenting a child. It's like very much like teaching a student in a scholastic environment.
Do you think your disability helps you in a strange way? So I'll give an example with myself. So when I'm making a film, I really focus on what the actors are saying and how they're delivering their lines and all that stuff, and I'm not distracted with other things that I can't see. You know, I'm really focused on what I need to focus on. And so in a funny kind of way, I reckon my disability actually helps me in my work. Do you think similar when training a dog?
Yeah, I think sometimes. I think it's sometimes easy for people to feel like having the disability that I have, I'm not able to do the work because, you know, there's body language involved in dog training, and people feel like because I can't see, it's very easy for me to miss body language cues. But the reality is that with being blind, I've had to have an awareness of what is going on around me. And so dogs, particularly where they've been in environments where owners have inadequately socialised, or even when they have been socialised and for various reasons a dog is reactive, they're hyper aware. You know, the dog is hyper vigilant, constantly on the look for triggers and reacting to them. I mean, dogs don't talk things out. They have to act them out. That's the only way they have to communicate their discomfort. So I find that my disability can be helpful in terms of I've been through a phase where I was hypervigilant and had a very easy startle response, and so for me, being able to relate on that level is quite easy. I do find that a lot of the dogs that I come into contact with or that I own, particularly in their adolescence, they start to be what people might label as reactive. One of the things that my dogs tend to do for me is they tend to communicate with their vocals that something is in the environment. So it might be another dog, or it might be, you know, an interesting looking person. And I honestly thought that I had some handling issues and I wasn't really doing the best for my dogs. And then a trainer who is now a really good friend actually explained to me that what they were seeing was that the dog was actually communicating what was going on in my environment. And so that gives me a lot of insight.
So you think the dog also picks up on your disability and is like, hey, I know she needs a little bit of help with this, so I'm going to give her a hand.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
That's really cool.
They're quite intuitive, so
And do you think you also have a bit of a sixth sense? Because obviously your other senses are heightened, not being able to see. Do you think that also helps you being in tune with the animal as well?
I don't feel like my senses are heightened, being able to not being able to see. I feel like that's a little bit of a misnomer, because I feel like there are some blind people that... and unfortunately, I have seen this in some guide dog handlers. You know, their dogs become quite reactive and they just don't know how to handle that situation. So I don't believe that all of us have that sixth sense, but I feel like I've developed it.
Fair enough. And so what are some of the... You speak about guide dogs. I know that you've had experience with guide dogs and working animals. What are some of, again, the key do's and don'ts in regards to working animals?
Okay, so some of the key do's and don'ts is... one of them is, and I'm speaking directly to the handlers here, physical stimulation is great, and obviously your dogs need to be worked. But take breaks. Like, give your guide dog a chance to actually be, or give your assistance dog a chance to actually be a dog. Enrich their brain. Yeah, mentally stimulate them, because they need to actually have that mental stimulation. It's like when we come home of an evening and we read a book, or we might do a crossword puzzle or whatever it is that floats your boat. That's what our dogs need. And actually that doesn't just apply to guide dogs, but it's something that I feel it's not really addressed enough when it comes to guide and assistance dogs is, you know, how are we mentally stimulating as well as offering physical stimulation?
So let them off the harness and let them run in the park and chase a ball and run on the beach and jump in the water and all that sort of good stuff.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Otherwise, they feel, you know, it does impact their working. Let them sniff. I know that we can't have them sniff while they're working, but they need to be able to sniff. Sniffing is a calming exercise. It is so important for their it's so important for their well-being. Dogs have about 300,000 scent receptors, over 300,000 scent receptors, and so it's their main sense. And when we're working with them, we take that away from them. I mean, and that obviously there's reasons for that, but we need to then replace that.
Fair enough.
And going back to what you were asking about, you know, how do owners hinder their dogs? Like, they do tell their dogs off for just being dogs. And we are the ones who have control of their entire lives. So, you know, we really need to reinforce the positively reinforce the behaviours we want. We need to actually strongly reinforce we like this, you know, the behaviors that we're reinforcing invariably, they naturally do. We've just got to be clear in our communication.
And how do we do that? Well, give me an example of how, because obviously give us a generalized example of how an owner should be clear with their dog. Like, give us an example of what a dog could do and how the owner should or should not react.
Well, okay, let's say we're asking the dog to sit. A lot of people, they sort of go, you know, Rover, sit, 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 sit. And all the dog is hearing is, Rover, blah, 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 blah. If we just tell them once and allow them to let that sink in, and sit, you know, and they sit and they get a reinforcer for it. Usually it's food. I love using food reinforcers because they're quick, they're easy, and you can use many of them. I cut my little reinforcers into tiny little pieces about the size of my pinky nail. And, I find that if we're clear in the giving a cue once and then shutting them up, you know, shutting up and just allowing them to process what we've told them. And if we're clear in our body language, I love using hand signals. they are visual creatures, so you know they're gonna pick up our hand signals and our body language far quicker than they're gonna pick up our vocal cues.
Cool.
So the other thing about being clear is what do you want? Like, why are you asking the dog to do what you're asking them to do? Okay, now you've worked out why, and you've worked out the function for asking them to do what they're going to do. Do you really need to ask it? Is it going to serve you and the dog for you to ask it? I mean, if that dog is down the back fence fighting with another dog, is you calling them to get their butt upstairs, you know, or get their butt toward you, is that helpful? Or would it be more helpful for you to go down to them, engage with them, and then make a game out of running away from them so that they actually think, oh, something to chase?
So give them a bit more of a positive, instead of yell, 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 you give them a bit more of a positive and a fun kind of vibe, yeah?
Keep everything fun. Keep everything fun.
Cool. Nice one. And so what is it about your job, your animal training and dog training, what is it about that you really love? What keeps you so passionate about it?
I love working with the people. I mean, obviously I love working with the dogs. That's a given. But I love working with the people. I love seeing the people and their dogs meet their behavioural outcomes that they're wanting to meet. And I get to spend most of my time outdoors, which is great. I love it.
Cool. Nice one. And so goals for the future, what do you hope to achieve going forward?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I'd love to continue doing what I am doing. I do want to eventually set up a space where we can actually do more of our training. I'd love to do some scent classes for particularly interested in working with guide and assistance dogs to actually get that scent happening. Again, sniffing is really, really important for well-being. So I'd love to actually introduce blind people to the world of scent work. So I'm actually training and teaching scent work at the moment.
Cool. So, go on.
So that's a goal.
That's good. Very good indeed. So if people want to learn more about Alyssa Morn and what you do and all that sort of good stuff, where can they go? What can they do?
Not only do I offer dog training, I also offer canine massage. So if you head to Alyssa Morn Massage and Intuitive Canine Behaviour Coaching on Facebook, you will see me there.
What does a massage do? I'm just curious. Why would somebody require their dog to get a massage?
Well, why do we get massage? We get massage to actually prevent health issues from surfacing. And we often get massage to deal with muscular strain. And it's the same for dogs. Dogs have muscular structures. And they do experience pain, and they do mask their pain in a major way, and so it often doesn't surface until, you know, suddenly they're limping and they need to go to the vet. So what I do is preventative and assists the dog to stay mobile and to stay emotionally balanced as well. It has some powerful healing for emotional health as well.
So would you recommend for pet owners, especially dog owners, that maybe booking them in for a massage every few months might be just a handy tip?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to say that a lot of the people who book dogs in for massage tend to be people with older dogs. Puppy prevention, you know, preventing muscular issues in puppies is so underrated and needs to be thought of more than it is. So guys with puppies, definitely bring them in. And it also prepares them for other touch situations and husbandry situations like vets, grooming, doctoring, you know, at home. So, yeah, get hands on your dog as early in their life as possible.
So that's actually, yeah, that's actually really good advice. So for folks out there that, so the dog doesn't freak out when he goes to the vet for the first time and he's used to having other people sort of not manipulate, so to speak, but put their hands on him, like you say, it's really important for a dog to experience those sorts of things as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, if I had a dollar for every groomer I know that has been bitten by a dog that just wasn't able to cope with being touched, I would be a rich woman. But yeah, it's actually. But the thing with dog bites is that they are so preventable. If we communicate our intentions to our dogs, if we listen to their communication. That's the other one. That needs to be reciprocal. We're communicating clearly. We're listening for their communication.
Now, some people might be a little bit confused because obviously a dog's going to bark and whatnot. How do we pick up on a dog's cues and what a dog wants?
Yeah, so they're not necessarily always going to bark. I mean, I gave the example of my dogs choosing to bark as a way of communicating what was in my environment. But dogs communicate with body language cues. So for the sighted ones among you, there's a really, really good resource called Doggy Drawings by Lily Chin. They actually outline the various body postures and things of dogs. But for my blind peers, I'll just run through a couple of the body language cues that are most common. So for a dog that is neutral or that is comfortable and happy with their environment, you'll see a loose body posture, or you know, if you've got a guide dog and you're blind, you'll feel that through the leash. Their body posture is loose. Their tail will be in a neutral position, so not too high, not too low. They'll almost be wobbling their entire body. Tongue might be just slightly out, but not too far. Not overly panting. Although that might be a little bit. Eyes are soft. I know that when my dog is hard staring at something, I can tell because he just stops dead.
And what the body sees is upper touch?
The body sees is upper touch. So it's about feeling. It's about feeling the body. You'll find that the dog might slowly blink. If they're comfortable, they might slowly blink. Might give a little yawn if they need to calm the situation down. Where there are a few less comfortable body language signs, you might find that the body stiffens, the tail might go high in the air if the dog is feeling that they need to dominate the situation, or they might tuck their tail in between their legs. Or tuck it down. The mouth will be hard, their eyes will be hard. You might actually see the whites of their eyes, and if you do see the whites of their eyes, you need to get out of that situation.
Because he's about to go ape droppings, as they say.
Well, yeah, look, it's not even the fact that they are about to go ape. It's more that they're not comfortable, right? And anybody that's made to feel uncomfortable for long enough is going to react.
Yep.
I don't care what species you are. If you're feeling uncomfortable for long enough, you're going to react.
Yeah, well, it's the same with humans, obviously.
This is it. If I sat there and, I don't know, what really annoys you?
Well, that's a lot of things that an actor's not doing what they're told annoys me.
So if you had enough of them in a day.
Yes.
And then you had one that was really, really full on.
Yes.
Having a complete diva moment.
Yes.
Yeah? I have a bit of a theatre background, so I get this. So if you have someone that's having a complete diva moment, and you've had a complete day of just people being pieces of...
You can swear, it's totally fine. I say fuck all the time.
Yeah, pieces of shit. You know, if people are you know, if people have been doing that all day and you've got this one person that's having a diva moment, you're at the end of your rope. You're going to react.
And the right? same goes for dogs, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody has a limit. Everybody has a limit.
So it's just about being in tune with the dog and understanding what he's feeling as well as yourself.
Yep. Yep. And be your dog's advocate. Be your dog's advocate. I can't stress that enough. Like if your dog is not coping in a particular environment, get them out of there. Don't make them just because you think they should be able to. Get them out of there.
Cool. Good advice. I like it. What a nice note to end on. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Alyssa. I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And, of course, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment, rate and review. 5 stars is always good. And, of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.